True story. We present Bernard Braden in Trouble in Turmoil 5.
This is really Max Barton's story. Being in the driver's seat, he had to make all the decisions. And that night, he made the biggest decision any man can ever make. Turmoil 5, an American aircraft, had an American crew and an English captain, Max Barton. Full name, Arthur Edward Mackenzie Barton. A flight lieutenant in the Royal Air Force on a 2-year exchange posting to our Strategic Air Command, he was a damn good pilot, which is what really matters, the kind of flying we were doing. We all liked and respected him, and that helped make us a good team. For convenience, we called him Captain Barton because Captain is our equivalent of an RAF flight lieutenant. The time we had this big trouble, we were flying in formation with several other stratotankers on a mission to refuel a squadron of B-52 jet bombers. It's a tricky enough deal in daylight, but we were on a night exercise. Although day or night made no difference in this case. You see, it was November 28th, and where we were, about halfway between the Arctic Circle and the North Pole, the sun goes south with the birds every winter, and we hadn't seen daylight for weeks. The rendezvous was at 16,000 feet over Petermann Glacier at the northwestern tip of Greenland, and right on schedule, we were waiting for the B-52s to come into position. Since ours was designated number 5 in the group, 4 other tankers would make contact ahead of us.
See them yet, Nick?
No. No, nothing over here, Captain. What about over
here? Here they are. The leader's closing in on the number 1. Jet on time.
Yeah, the others should be right along behind him. Yeah, I think I see number 2's contact. And number 3. And there's a B-52 starting to line up on number 4.
Right. Our turn next, and they're
Captain, boom operator here. Our customer's inside and starting to close into position.
Roger, Sergeant Painter. We're ready for him.
It required intense concentration on the flight instruments for Max Barton to maintain a steady platform from which to deliver the high-grade jet fuel, called JP-4, to the B-52. And as co-pilot, I had to sort of keep an eye cocked for and attend to anything likely to distract him.
Engineer here, Captain. Refueling in progress.
Roger. Thank you, Sergeant King.
Captain Jim Sullivan, one of the 2 Negroes in our crew, was navigator, about the best at his job any of us had ever flown with. His attention was riveted to the radar scope, giving positions of the other tankers relative to ours.
Navigator, Captain. Position being maintained.
Roger, navigator. Thank you.
The other regular member of our crew was the radio operator, Staff Sergeant Morris Carmen, a soft-spoken Negro from North Carolina. During refueling, he stood about 2/3 of the way back, looking down into the lower deck where the feeders from all the tanks came together to a single 4-inch pipe that carried the JP-4 jet fuel into the flying boom. That trip, we also carried 2 extras, Captain Bob Pine, a navigator instructor, and Technical Sergeant Jimmy Ruiz, a spare boom operator. That made 8 of us altogether. It was Morris Carmen who discovered the trouble. At exactly 21:53 hours, 9:53 p.m., he was standing astride the manhole leading down into the lower aft compartment when he detected the strong odor of JP-4 and heard a sound he immediately recognized.
Holy smoke!
Hey, Peter, hold everything, man! Something's wrong in the lower compartment!
As Morris Carmen shouted, Paul Painter also caught a whiff of the JP-4 jet fuel. He automatically retracted the boom from the B-52, signaled the bomber pilot to stand off, and used his intercom mic to alert us in the front office.
Boom operator, Captain. We got us a bad smell of fuel back here. I've broken contact with our receiver.
You know what it is yet?
Leak in the lower compartment. Carmen's gone to investigate. I'm going down there, too.
Right, Sergeant. Report back as soon as possible, and be careful of sparks.
Roger, Captain. Out.
Nick. I'm going to reduce prop speed to 1900 RPM. I want to lose altitude in a hurry to relieve pressurization and try to vent the fumes. You break radio silence. Report the trouble to the leader. Tell him we're going down to 10,000 feet.
Yes, sir.
Well, here we go. Sergeant King.
Sir?
Going by the master switches.
Yes, Captain. Right away.
Hitting master switch bar now, sir. Master switch is out, sir.
Thank you.
Captain, radio's gone dead.
I know. We just killed the electrical system. With loose fuel, it needs only a tiny spark from one of those relays, and this whole kite explodes.
us with it.
Great.
Did your message get out before the radio quit?
Most of it, I think.
Oh, well, too late now.
We've still got panel lights. Emergency batteries.
Roger.
Instruments.
All dead except the basic three. Artificial horizon, turn and bank indicator, directional gyro.
Real primitive.
Oh, we could fly to hell and back on those.
Better you than me.
Looks like we got us some real bad trouble, Captain, sir.
Find the leak, Sergeant.
Negative. I've been down the lower compartment with Carmen, but we ain't found us no leak.
But there is a leak.
Sure as you're born, Captain, sir. A lot of loose JP-4 sloshing around down there. The air's getting thick, too. Starting to get some of the fumes up here.
Yeah, I can smell it.
You're right. Sergeant Painter, get back there and dump the hatches. Might help to clear the air.
Yes, sir, Captain, sir.
And, Sergeant, nothing to cause a spark, but we've had it.
Roger, Captain, sir.
Jim Sullivan.
Behind you.
Can you give me a heading back to Thule?
I guess I can try.
Go, man, as soon as you can, please.
Thule was our base, a bleak, thoroughly unlovely spot in northern Greenland. It was then about 300 miles roughly south-southwest of us. And that's all even our navigator knew officially. You see, when we fly as a group, called flying in cell, the navigator uses his radar to maintain his plane stationed in the formation and relies on the guy in the lead aircraft for position reports. Now, with radio and other instruments out of service and only the scantiest data available, any plot we got had to be dead reckoning based on a lucky guess. Fortunately, Jim Sullivan's the kind of navigator who likes to know which way the cat's jumping, so twice in the half hour before the trouble began, he'd flicked his radar to ground search on a quick scan for a berry. And this helped him give Max Barton a course he hoped would take us back to base. Meanwhile, Sergeant Paul Painter had gone back to relay and carry out the captain's orders.
Hey, Carmen! Morris Carmen!
What's the score, man?
Captain wants us to dump the hatches, ventilate the fumes out of here.
Right, I'll help you.
Okay, you do the one over the wing on the right side.
It's practically done, man. Practically done.
I'll get the left rear over here.
Come on. Come on. Wouldn't you know it? Pick and live is stuck. It's coming. It's coming. Good. Oh!
Hey, the
pole!
Oh. You okay?
Yeah, I guess so.
I saw you bounce off the wall. Yeah, what happened?
When I dumped that hatch, the rush of wind, it tossed me clear across to this side.
Nothing broken?
No, I'm fine. I'm going back down below. Zeke and I find the leak.
Okay, I'll be with you as soon as I get the wing hatch off. You down here, Painter?
Yeah, but I ain't found no leak yet.
Look at all this fuel slopping around the deck.
I reckon it's about 3 inches deep.
Means it's got to be a bad break, like the main pipe.
Hey, that's an idea. Shine your flashlight over here. No, a little this way where my beam is. Yeah, you're right. See it?
Yeah. Holy smoke.
See, I better go up front. Tell the captain.
Sir,
we got us a bust in the main feed line.
Can you fix it?
Negative. Coupling's gone, got itself split.
How bad is it, Sergeant?
The way that there JP-4 jet fuel's gushing out, it's like to be 50, 60 gallons a minute.
Can you get rid of the fumes?
Negative. Too much loose fuel. Lower aft's filling up fast.
Well, put everybody on 100% oxygen. Nick, better go back and see if you can do anything.
Roger, let's go, Sergeant Painter.
And Nick, take a portable bottle of oxygen for your mask.
Okay, Captain. What are you doing down on the deck, Sergeant?
We got a hatch open each side, Lieutenant, sir. You don't want to get sucked out. You got to crawl lower than a snake's belly and hang on to anything you see.
So, half crawling and hanging on to anything I touch, I followed Sergeant Painter past the overwing hatch. We eventually joined Captain Pine and Sergeant Ruiz around the manhole, leading down into the lower aft compartment where the leak was. With everybody wearing oxygen masks, talking was kind of rough. We'd take a deep breath, pull off the mask, shout a few words, then slap the mask on again before the fumes knocked us out. I got the technique from watching Captain Pine as he filled me in on the state of things.
Fumes still pouring from the break. Lower tanks are isolated. No K. Gravity's pulling the stuff out of the upper tanks. Won't stop if they're empty.
The lower aft door down there. Can we jettison it?
Maybe, if we can reach it.
What do you think, Sergeant Ruiz? Can we reach it?
Yeah, might reach it okay. But it won't get rid of all the fuel.
Should help some. I'm going down to try.
Hey, Lieutenant Nichols, wait. If you go down there, you got to wear a parachute. When that door drops out, you're liable to go with it.
Okay. We both tried, Captain, Sergeant Painter and I, but we couldn't jettison the lower aft door.
It wouldn't have got rid of all the fuel anyway, only solved part of the problem. Thanks for trying, Nick.
Any other ideas? We'd try anything.
Captain, sir, how about I chop a hole down there? I bet we drain most of that loose fuel that way.
Negative, Painter. Negative.
What's wrong, Sergeant King? It's aluminium.
Right, Captain. That aluminum skin won't spark. It's got steel nuts and bolts, steel fittings.
He's right, Sergeant Painter. If your axe hits steel, we'll all blow up.
We all now realize we were riding a highly sensitive bomb primed to become a very spectacular fireworks display that none of us would be in a position to enjoy. And scattered about the 117-foot length of Turmoil 5 were literally hundreds of ways of accidentally lighting the fuse. For example, the heart of our electrical network was right down there where that puddle of jet fuel was growing bigger and bigger by the minute. If anybody cut in the main power system again, even for a second, something would be sure to spark. And it only needed one very tiny spark to set off the granddaddy of all explosions. None of us was exactly a first-class insurance risk, and what we needed was a miracle. But with miracles sort of out of season, we were relying on Max Barton to dream up a solution to our problem.
Sergeant King.
Right here, Captain.
What's your estimate of the amount of fuel we can expect to leak out into the lower compartments?
Just from the upper tanks, about 5 tons.
Captain Barton, we're flying in clouds. What if we miss the base at Thule?
Well, we don't want to bail out of the bay, do we? Ground temperature must be 50 degrees of frost, 20 below zero. So we'll head back inland.
You mean you'd land this kite on the glacier?
Maybe land, maybe bail out. Depends on circumstances.
It's off a rugged country, no shelter, constant wind, freezing temperature. We wouldn't have a chance.
Ah, well. Air rescue will come after us?
Real great. Let's not kid ourselves. It's about 1,000,000 square miles of ice and snow. It wouldn't be easy to find in the dark.
Let's wait and see what happens. Maybe we'll get lucky.
Look, Captain. Suppose we do locate Thule. You still going to try a landing?
Been thinking about it, Nick. Here's how it works out. We'll have 5 tons of jet fuel running loose in the belly of the kite. If we nose down too much, the whole lot rushes forward like a tidal wave.
And we dig our nose in the runway.
Exactly. And suppose as we reach the runway, I try to stall. But suppose I haul back too much. The fuel rushes back.
Yeah, and makes a tail drag.
Right. And sparks fly.
We all go boom like a Roman candle. We'd be very pretty and very dead.
Right. It's a risk. But, she is $1,000,000 worth of aircraft.
Captain Barton, sir.
Yes, Sergeant Painter?
Well, I just been down the manhole to have me another look-see at the lower compartment. We got us a nice little lake.
How deep?
That there loose fuel. She's up over the catwalks now. Like to be pretty near knee-deep.
Still flowing?
Yes, sir, Captain, sir.
Our tenor of the situation, Sergeant Painter. It's only fair you should know. Our ETA over Thule is supposed to be 2307 hours. And you can bail out there if you want to. You see, it'll be a dangerous landing. We'll have to go in with insufficient power and no flaps. If we collapse our nose wheel or drag our tail, we'll abort it right there, every one of us. There won't be anything for you to do during touchdowns, so you can make your own decision about whether...
Lieutenant, sir. The captain. He's out cold.
His oxygen mask. Quick, Painter.
We're here. Have you got it?
Yeah, yeah. Now, let me get it on him. There.
Gonna be okay?
Yeah, he's coming around. He's talking so seriously, he forgot his oxygen mask. Breathing too many fumes. Just give him a second or two. He'll be fine.
Thanks. Sir, help me.
You all right now, sir?
Yes. Yes, thanks. Sergeant Painter, I told you the score. Decision's up to you whether or not you bail out. And while you're thinking about it, send the others up one at a time, and I'll put the proposition to them.
Well, come on, speak up, troops. You all heard Captain Barton. How's the deal look to you? What about you, Captain Pine, sir? You think we should bail out?
What does Sergeant Druin think? He used to be a paratrooper, right, Sergeant?
Yes, sir, 96 jumps. I don't like it.
Any special reason?
Yeah, because it's a night jump. And that's tougher to do, more dangerous. Broken legs, broken backs, broken necks. Now, I've seen too many times. And in terrain nowhere near as rough as this is.
What are you going to do, Colin?
Well, I'll do anything you do. I'm with you, buddy.
Well, I always had me a hankering to make a jump. Captain Pine, sir, you reckon it's okay? I mean, we ain't deserting Captain Barton.
Told you. Nothing you can do to help. You'll even do him a favor bailing out.
How do you figure that, sir?
Stay, and he feels responsible for you. Jump, and he figures you're safe. Pretty well.
Oh, that settles it. I'm going to jump.
I'm right behind you, Sergeant.
Not me. I'll ride down with the aircraft.
I hope you know what you're doing. He's going in hot and heavy. No reverse props and no flaps, no nothing. Oh, so all right he gets her on the runway, so maybe he's going too fast, so he runs off the other end like an express train. A big bang, and you're just itsy-bitsy pieces of nothing, scattered over half of Greenland.
Okay, Penny, you sold me. If you guys go, I go too.
Now, you're talking smart. Now, you check out these troops, see if they got their harness fit tight, and tell them what to do. I'll check Sullivan and King, and then report to Captain Barton. I'll be back in a few minutes. I've done what you said, Captain, sir. My troops is ready to jump.
Right. One more thing. The landing gear. It has to be cranked down by hand. Will you look after it before you go? You'll need help.
Yes, sir. My buddy Carmen, he'll help me.
Thank you. We're now starting down. I'll approach the base at 5,000 feet. That's when you chaps can bail out. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Captain, sir. The same to you.
How about you, Nick? Do you want to go? Or are you planning to stay?
If you're staying, I'll go along for the ride.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate that very much.
At Thule Air Base, the deputy commander of the air refueling wing, Colonel W.B. Carpenter, was having his own private ulcer session. You see, I'd only just started to report our trouble to the lead tanker when Captain Barton had ordered our electrical system out, and, of course, the radio also died. The leader radioed base, but all he could say was we'd gone off the air and broken formation. So, for more than an hour, Colonel Carpenter had been sweating out the anxious wait for more information. He got it as we were approaching the base, and it was announced by the insistent ring of a telephone on his desk.
Colonel Carpenter here.
Radar room, sir. Unidentified aircraft bearing 130 degrees.
Scramble and F-89.
News of Barton, sir?
Oh, no, Lieutenant. Unidentified. It is Barton. The fighter can lead him down.
Yeah, if he needs leading down.
Of course. If it isn't Barton, I damn well want to know who's stooging around in our airspace. Yes, Colonel Carpenter speaking.
Control tower, Colonel. We've sighted a parachute going to land on the ramp.
What? Well, grab him. Bring him here.
I could hear that, sir. One of Barton's crew?
If it is, it means something serious.
Yeah, I think they can get all out there before they're over the bay.
If they're bailing out, they'd better not drop into the bay. At this temperature, a man can only live a few minutes in that water.
How about a helicopter, sir?
Yeah, Lieutenant. Call rescue. I want them to get airborne and start looking.
Yes, sir. Immediately.
And tell them there are 8 men in that crew. Carpenter here. What is it?
Guard commander, sir. Parachute has just landed down on the old runway.
I want him. Here. Fast.
There's a second parachute. It's Colonel down by the lake there.
I know. I just heard. Mark both landings on a map. Might help us plot where to expect the others. Where are those 2 men? I want to know what's happening up there. All right, gentlemen, quiet and listen to me. Now, we've interrogated a man who bailed out of Turmoil 5. We know now Barton's bringing her in with 5 tons of loose fuel slushing around in her belly. That crazy limey. 10 to 1, he'll blow himself up, but we'll give him every break we can. I want all runways and the apron cleared. Everything off. Close the field to all traffic. I don't care who it is. Get all emergency services clued up. Fire wagons, ambulances, tow trucks, the whole shebag. Have them all standing by. This is top priority. Now, that's all. Get cracking. Double quick.
Just after our 6 guys bailed out, the emergency batteries finally failed. And Max Barton was left with only the airspeed indicator and the air ball, which is a sort of bank indicator. Fortunately, these operate without electricity, but I had to light them up with my flashlight. We were alone now. The long, empty deck stretched out behind us, and beneath it were 5 tons of highly explosive jet fuel that had been spewed out into the belly of the aircraft. Any loss of control would convert this dangerous liquid from a placid lake to a tidal wave, completely wrecking Turmoil 5 and us with it. I knew how Max was feeling, both lonely and tense at the same time. But he didn't show it as he concentrated his full attention on preparing for the most perilous landing any pilot has ever had to make.
Nick, we'll turn on final approach at 160 miles an hour, then ease down to 145, crossing the fence. Nick, you realize this is my first landing without flaps in anything this heavy.
Don't worry, Max. You'll do it.
Just wanted you to know, that's all. Only fair you should know.
Few pilots have ever made a no-flaps landing with an aircraft weighing better than 60 tons. Nor would they want to try. We swung gingerly through our last circuit, Max willing himself not to over-control. And then, very carefully, he lined us up with the distant runway.
Okay, Nick, we're committed. Give me a running report on speed and manifold pressure.
Roger. Speed 165, pressure 32 inches. 160 now. 160. 155. Speed 150. 150.
Throttle back a little.
Coming back to 30 inches.
But a little high. A little high, Nick. Back a little more.
28 inches. 145 miles an hour. 145. We're crossing the shoreline. Mile and a half to go.
Hold speed and pressure right there, Nick. Steady now. Steady. We're over the fence.
Speed 140. 140. Speed 135. 135. Easy. Easy. The tires hit, and we were rolling on concrete. But our troubles weren't over because we were moving too fast and our nose was too high. We were traveling 135 miles an hour, nearly 200 feet per second. And even our 10,000-foot runway wouldn't last long at that rate. Until the nose wheel was on the ground, Max could neither steer nor safely use the brakes. So he had no control if we hit a patch of ice or caught a gust of crosswind. 3 seconds went by. 600 feet. Another 2 seconds. Another 400 feet. The nose was still up. And we'd started to drift to the left. To lower the nose, Max shoved the control column slowly forward. Nothing happened. The nose still hung high. Our tail was only inches off the concrete. We seemed to be hurtling madly towards our own destruction.
It's not working. I've goofed it.
No, easy on the brakes. We're not supposed to use the brakes going more than 60 miles per hour. We were doing close to 100. And when Max's feet moved towards the tow brakes, I'd shouted without thinking. It was a desperate chance because a lurch at that moment would have finished us. But we didn't lurch. The nose came down and slowed slightly. Max Barton hit the brakes harder. Our speed dropped again. And then, with almost startling suddenness, that terrible momentum was gone. And Turmoil 5 was sitting on the runway.
Come on, Nick. Let's get out of here.
The events you have just heard all occurred on the night of November the 28th, 1956. As a result of what happened in Turmoil 5 that night, Max Barton was awarded the Strategic Air Command Flying Safety Award and the American DFC. Since then, his exchange posting completed, he's returned to the United Kingdom, received a promotion, and is now an RAF liaison officer with the United States Air Force in Britain. Now, Squadron Leader Barton, how did you feel about it at the time?
Uncomfortable. I had two very bad moments. First, when I realized that we couldn't stop the leak and we couldn't get rid of the loose fuel. All our training in emergencies had not covered this one. I had to think it out from first principles, and I did not know if I was up to it. Secondly, I had an awful moment when we were on the runway and I couldn't get the nose down. All the time, fuel was pouring to the rear of the aircraft. In the end, my luck held out, but I would not like to have to do it again.
That was True Story, Trouble in Turmoil 5. The part of co-pilot Nichols was played by Bernard Braden, and Flight Lieutenant Barton by Dennis Gosher. Others taking part were John Farrell, Bob Keston, Richard Murray, Nicholas Stewart, Tommy Duggan, and Errol McKinnon. The script was written by Bob Keston, and the recorded production was by Alan Burgess.